We begin this evening with the SS Muhammad Ali El Kabir. That's the name of a British ship which was caught in the chaotic Battle of the Atlantic during World War II, and one of the many vessels torpedoed by a U-boat. It sank hundreds of kilometres off the Donegal coast, and in the following weeks, dozens of bodies washed ashore at Glencolum Kill in the southwest of the county. I'm joined by our reporter Mark McMenamin, who's been finding out more about this story. Mark, you're very welcome indeed to the History Show.
Thanks very much, Miles.
And the ship had a life, apparently, before it became a troop ship.
Yes, it had a life, and a very interesting life it had indeed, Miles. It was originally christened the SS Tenno, built in Scotland in 1922, and plied its trade mainly for the Aherlyne Company. It was a kind of one of these twin steam passenger liners, and it took a route from Valparaiso to Panama and onward to New York City, roughly from about 1922 to 1935. Now, it changes its name when it is sold to an Egyptian company. The sale was kind of due to the economic downturn following the Wall Street crash in 1929. And in the years afterwards, it's bought by the Egyptians. And of course, we know that, you know, it's part of the British Empire, which is important to its later story then. It's named after an Egyptian king, the SS Muhammad Ali El Kabir. And it then is kind of moving along kind of from Cyprus to Malta and onwards to Marseille. King Farouk of Egypt even has his honeymoon on board it. So it's a well-known ship indeed.
So you've been speaking to a couple of local historians about the sinking of this ship. Let's first of all hear from Donegal schoolteacher and historian Seosamh O'Callaghan on how the ship became part of the British Navy.
As we know, Egypt at that time was part of the British Empire and very much controlled by the British system and the British government. And so when World War II broke out, the British required ships, and this ship was one of these ships that they seconded, as you could say. They took it into the British naval fleet, and it was used then as a troop carrier, and they increased her tonnage and her capacity. And so that from 1940 on then, it was in the service of the British Navy during the war.
That's Seosamh O'Callaghan talking about how the ship became part of the British Navy. Now, like so many seaworthy vessels, the SS Muhammad Ali El Kabir was requisitioned for the war effort. The Battle of the Atlantic then goes on to be essentially the longest running military campaign of the war. It goes all the way from 1939 to 1945. And Mark, you also spoke to local historian Brian Drummond. So let's hear more now from Brian on the Battle of the Atlantic.
Well, the Battle of the Atlantic is a big battle. It's described by a lot of historians as the longest battle of the war. Ships were being sunk all the time, all through that time period. And the UK basically needed 1 million tons of materials per week imported. And that's everything from munitions to oil to war materials to food as well. And it's a big, big battle. And the numbers in it are horrific. It is an Allied victory, but it's a great cost to the Allies. There's 3,500 ships lost, merchant ships lost. There's 175 warships lost, over 700 aircraft. Between sailors and merchant seamen and the rest, there's guts of 60,000 men lost in this battle. And it's every bit as fraught for the Germans as well. They lose almost 900 U-boats, 780-odd U-boats are lost. Their surface fleet, the famous Tirpitz, the battleship Bismarck, their entire surface fleet is almost taken out of it as well. And they lose like 30,000 sailors. And the attrition rate for the U-boat service was something like 75%. And that's 75% dead because these guys didn't come back from the sea. Churchill himself, when he described the Battle of the Atlantic, he said, "The only thing that frightened me during the war was the U-boat peril. I was more anxious about this battle than any other battle in the war, including the Battle of Britain." That's the type of war it was, and that's the type of battle it was.
Brian Drummond there talking about the Battle of the Atlantic. And the SS Muhammad Ali El Kabir was caught up in this maelstrom of naval warfare. Mark, talk to us about the strategic importance then of Ireland during the war, of the seas and the coastlines around the country.
Yeah, well, Ireland was very important because it lay in what was known as the Western Approaches. Now, what were the Western Approaches? So if you were to take John O'Groats at the top of the United Kingdom, and you were to take Land's End, and you were to draw two parallel lines 700 miles out west, including Ireland, that was the Western Approaches, okay? And that was where the ships, that was kind of the box or the window where ships coming to England had to pass through. Okay, the closer that you came to the coastline of Ireland, the safer in effect you were. So ships travelled in convoy all along what are called the Western Approaches, and in particular the northwest coast of Ireland in around the Donegal area was of huge strategic importance. They would kind of try to stay as close to the coastline as possible, and when they rounded the top of Ireland, then they were kind of free and into safer waters and could make onward journeys then on to Liverpool. So from a strategic point of view, the Western Approaches and the coast of Ireland, in particular the coast of Donegal, an area I suppose we're looking at, you know, maybe 200 to 300 nautical miles off the coast of Donegal, was strategically important in the Battle of the Atlantic. And of course, from the very outset of the war, you had the Kriegsmarine with their U-boats out to stop any ships coming through that area.
Okay, so let's hear again from historian Brian Drummond, who describes how the boat sank.
It's about 230 nautical miles away from the Donegal coast. It's a fair bit out. If you think about it, Dublin is closer to this point than the Donegal coast than the ships are. The convoy is zigzagging, but late in the evening, after 9 o'clock in the evening, about 9:30, the convoy is attacked. The convoy is zigzagging, but it doesn't help the ship. A U-boat, U-38, we know the name of the U-boat, fires two torpedoes and one of them hits the ship. Now, what happens to the ship is it starts to sink, but it's sinking slowly. It has 2 hours to sink. It actually sunk after 11:30 in the evening. But it allows time to get the survivors off. 11 lifeboats are put in the water, 20 life rafts, but the seas are rough. And there's documented evidence that men being washed off the life rafts. There is an escort vessel, HMS Griffin, and HMS Griffin basically chases off the U-boat using depth charges. It returns to go and pick up the survivors, and it collects 766 survivors, but 97 men are drowned in the sea. And of that group, most of those bodies are lost. But over the next 2 weeks or so, along the Donegal coast in particular, 33 bodies are washed ashore.
Mark, what kind of place was Donegal in those days? It must have been absolutely shocking when those bodies started to wash ashore.
It's a shocking incident in any time, okay, for bodies to start washing up on shore. But for the people of Donegal, particularly West Donegal, today it is still quite an underdeveloped area. There's a good tourist trade and everything else, but very underdeveloped and very rural and remote. And in those days, that was even more so. It was largely Irish-speaking. There was high immigration. So for bodies to start washing up on shore was particularly... It was like something totally, massively out of the ordinary, out of the blue, a crazy thing for these people to see. Very frightening indeed. The locals, I suppose, they saw the humanitarian side of it, and they quickly started taking some of the bodies in, and obviously they were not able to identify them, but they made arrangements for them to be buried locally then.
Now, we know the name of the U-boat captain who actually fired the missile. What else do we know about him?
Yeah, this guy, Henry Lieber, was a very, very interesting guy indeed. He actually, in his career, he sank 34 ships. Okay, as a U-boat captain, he sank 34 ships in his entire career throughout the duration of the war. The interesting thing about Henry Lieber is that he only died in 1997, which makes this story like it's a very, very recent history, you know, if anything else.
Let's hear from, again, historian Brian Drummond speaking about the bodies that washed ashore in Donegal.
To be fair, there's not much detail on that. It's fair to say that they did do their best. Bodies were collected. In this instance here, as in all instances, the Gardaí were involved. The thing about it is, when bodies been in the water, and certainly when it's been in the water for a number of days or weeks, it may not be in the greatest shape. And identification is something that needs to be taken into context as well. It's essentially, when bodies were taken ashore, it was reported the guards, there's a proximity to the border, so bodies can be repatriated. But there is this thing as well, that as the bodies come in, how do you identify them and how do you know who it was?
Brian Drummond talking there about the bodies washing ashore in Donegal. And here's Joseph O'Kelly on how the sinking was commemorated in the area in recent years.
When you're not directly involved in yourself and you don't know the people that are the families and the people that were deceased or the survivors, it's very hard to exactly relate to it. But at the same time, you do understand a common humanity that there was a loss of life, that there was a tragedy, and that these people, be it on whatever side of the divide they were when it came to the war, they were human beings first and foremost. And, you know, it wasn't for us to decide one way or the other with regards to that. If we could have been of help and assistance, we would have been. And the people of Donegal back in the 1940s during the war were. And so it's taken some time, but there was a commemoration back in 2014. The local priest father, or the parish priest father, Francis McAteer, they erected a lovely Celtic cross with the circle around it. They erected one of those to commemorate, and a small flag as well. So look, it's obviously it's in the community memory. Again, they don't necessarily have an understanding of everything that was involved in it, but they do understand that there was a loss of life off the coast, and that at best it shouldn't be forgotten, and that it should be commemorated. And for that reason, it's still very much alive in the memory of the people. And there are probably people that still have the stories of what happened. Obviously, they've seen the bodies being washed in, and many of them were buried in local graveyards. About 30 of the bodies were actually later washed in over the following 2 weeks.
So, Mark, that's just one way in which the incident is commemorated locally in Donegal. You spoke to both Brian and Joseph about commemoration and its challenges when it comes to World War II.
Yeah, there are a lot of challenges, I suppose. The interesting thing is, you know, this is commemorated locally in quite a nice way with the Celtic cross that Joseph mentioned. And, you know, there's been kind of a local ceremony, and there have been relatives that have been in touch with some of the locals in Donegal. And that's been a nice element to it. Where I'm from in Donegal as well, I'm from South Donegal originally, in parts of West Fermanagh as well. You see numerous, numerous commemorations of downed aircraft that crashed in the area. And that's all well and good. But I think when we look at this in the round, and we look at, you know, the fact that Ireland certainly wasn't neutral, you know, neutral with a small n, that there should be a kind of a wider recognition of Ireland's role in the war. And we should kind of, I suppose, readjust and look at and reappraise the way that Ireland was actually involved in the war, you know, from a point of view of the Donegal Corridor, which allowed ships to pass out over Donegal out into the Atlantic. You know, we actually had an incident that not many people know of British ships docking in Killybegs in Donegal, you know, and that has been under the radar as well. And of course, then there's the huge intelligence cooperation that was going on between the Irish Secret Service and the British and the American OSS. When we take all that in the round and we look at things, perhaps it's appropriate in the years coming up now ahead that we reassess and we have a new look at the way we are going to commemorate World War II in this country.
Well, Mark, thank you very much for bringing that story, the tragic story of the SS Muhammad Ali El-Kabir to our attention. Many thanks for joining us this evening.